Well, I was thinking that one of the things that would be helpful that for us to kind of talk again about the illusionary nature of thought. And then Michael thought it would be really a good idea for us to talk about the principles again. So we're going to do that before we go back to questions. Okay? So I want you to really just go back to listening with nothing on your mind. Now, you may have noticed that when you're listening, you're a couple of sentences ahead of us. Sometimes people will tell me, could you talk a little faster? Which, if you were my husband, he'd probably roll over if he knew that somebody actually asked me that. But, you know, it's like sometimes your mind is racing and you kind of want to get on with it, like get to the point. Whatever it is that you're doing, you want to just go back to listening for a feeling. Because that's really what you're looking for. Mental well-being is really a state of being. And that one in which your mind is free of extraneous thinking. You're focused in the moment. You're having some kind of a positive experience. Could be a secure experience. Could be a happy experience. But it's appropriate to the moment. And you're generally feeling calm. So that's what you're looking for, right? Like, who would ever say, oh, I have too much calmness in my life? People say I have boredom, but that's boredom is negative thinking about how you can't see anything to do in your life. But nobody ever comes into my office and says, you know, I've got such a wonderful life, I just can't stop thinking about it. It's like the things that we overthink are things that appear as problems to us. Now, one of the most important things I think about the discovery that Sidney Banks made when he kind of uncovered the principles was that thought creates an illusion that what's going on outside of us is what's creating how we feel on the inside. So if you get angry, it seems like the car that pulled in front of you on the freeway made you mad, made you angry, created that emotional experience in you. It feels like how we feel comes directly from people around us. I mean, you know, kids will come in and I have this one kid, he's 16 years old, and he goes, my mother's trying to ruin my life. And the mother thinks that he's got a lot of problems and wants to put him in a foster home. So and it's got there's a little truth in that, but it's because she's really scared, okay, that she's doing that behavior. So I think that the way that human beings have come into being is unbelievably magical. Because the way that thought works is like for physical pain, right? Like if I cut my foot as I'm walking around, I feel pain in my foot. But is the pain in my foot? No. Pain is not in your foot, but it appears to be in your foot because your mind creates this experience, creates an illusion that makes it feel like the pain is in your foot. So you'll look at your foot and take care of it before you bleed to death. Now that's kind of amazing, isn't it, that that's how it works. So when people like would get their legs cut off, they will feel pain in the leg that's not there. Then the doctor comes in and gives them medication to take the pain in the leg that's not there away. Because the pain's not really in the leg, it's created through thought in your mind, okay, as a way of alerting yourself. Now, all these nerve endings are sending information up to your brain going, something's really wrong down here, I can't feel anything but not below the knee, you got to really make her look down here because something's really wrong. So it really hurts, so you look. So one of the ways they treat people that have their leg and they have what that's called phantom limb syndrome is they put a mirror between your legs. And so you trick your brain into thinking, no, that's a faulty signal. It's okay. Everything's okay down there. And then the pain goes away in the leg that's not there. Okay? So everything we experience in terms of our emotional life is being created by our thinking moment to moment. But it looks like it's being created by our life moment to moment. Sometimes week to week, year to year. But it's not. It's because what we're doing is we're looking at life and it's we take it in and then we're thinking about it, see? And so what you're living in is your experience of life as it's filtered through your own insecurities, your own biases, your own beliefs, everything that you already think about yourself. And so how you feel here is letting you know whether how you're currently processing this information is in a healthy state of mind or an insecure state of mind. Now, isn't that unbelievable? That there's a way that we can tell, because we have this great ability to think anything we want. Okay, we can think anything we want. And so God decided, he said, okay, I think I'll play a game of life. Be able to see stuff. I want to see stuff. And I want to see stuff in as many different ways as I can. Okay, so I'll just like see what happens as I have these humans have this experience. Now, actually it's true for animals too, but seeing as we're all human here, I'll just talk about that. And so he said, I think I'm going to just let them think whatever they want and see what happens. See how it plays out. It'll be really interesting to see what happens with it. So, well, how will they know if their thinking is healthy thinking or not? Oh, I'll give them feelings. And their feelings will be there to let them know if they are thinking in a state of mind that's healthy or they're thinking in a state of mind that's not that healthy. So when we start having a lot of stress and negative feelings, that's our little, those are like the speed bumps in the road, you know, letting you know that you're kind of getting off in the wrong track. Time to quiet your mind down, stop thinking about whatever it is, let it go, and relax. And then when you do that, then your mind resets. Now you see life differently again. Like, I used to stay up at night, and I'd be worrying about something that was such a huge problem. And in those days, we didn't have computers or cell phones or anything else, so that was it. You could only just sit and worry about it. And I'd get up in the morning after I'd get a rest. I couldn't remember what was so important. Then I'd start worrying about what I couldn't remember was so important the night before. Because certainly it must have been very important if I was up worrying that much. So I'd get in this vicious worry cycle, thinking about what was wrong in my life that I had to fix. So when I started to understand how the principles work, I was like, oh, there was nothing. It was just my own thinking tricking me into thinking that there was a problem when there wasn't any. Then when I got into a healthier state of mind by getting a little rest, boom, looked different to me. It's all different again. So I had this reoccurring thing that I would do is because I worked with women who were abused and victims, I had victimization on my mind. I saw it everywhere. In my life and everybody else's life, it was just everywhere. And so after I started learning the principles and I was working with Joe Bailey and we were working, and I'd be driving home at the end of the day and I'd be thinking, that Joe, I do more work than he does. I put more money into this thing. He's taking advantage of me. And then I think, okay, now, Chris, you're kind of the victim right now. So you don't really know if this is true or not. You better wait till you're in a better state of mind, because clearly your feeling is not good right now. Okay. So I'd stop thinking about it, go home, get a rest, get up in the morning, totally forget about it. Then I'd be driving home the end of the next day, and I'd start thinking about it again. And now I think, well, maybe I'm thinking about it 2 days in a row. It must be true. Well, remember, go get yourself in a good place. If you're still thinking about it then, you might need to deal with something. And never did, of course, because I realized that whenever I started seeing myself as a victim, I really couldn't tell if it was true or not. But it also didn't matter, because all I needed to do was get into a good place and see what I needed to do anyway that would be different. Does that make sense? So it's kind of like what you're thinking is what you're seeing. Like that great comedian Flip Wilson said, you know, like, what you see, honey, is what you get. It's really what you think is what you get. And so the more you're focused on that, the more real it gets. And then the more you see it in your life and the more truth there is, like you were talking about. But Chris, I've got all these facts that indicate that my thinking is accurate. And we're not really talking about accurate. We're talking about, is this thinking doing you any good? Like, if you continue down this line, do you want to be happy or do you want to be right? Do you want to be in a good feeling or do you want to be miserable? So taking the high road or taking the road of less resistance in the positive, the more you start to see that your feelings are your best friends, all of them. Because it's the only way you can tell when you're off base. Now, I don't know about you, but I've gotten really mad at people and felt very justified in doing it, only to discover one little piece of information that totally made them not guilty of whatever I was charging them with. Mm-hmm. After I had been embarrassed myself and told the person off about what I thought they had done that was so mean to me. And that's just kind of, once you understand that your feelings are just there to let you know when your thinking is a little bit suspect, then you just calm down and suddenly you see it differently. Now that's magic. You see yourself differently, you see life differently, you see other people, you see doors open instead of closed. It's a whole different experience. So life is like, we create life like a projector, not like a camera. I think he said that on his bit. That's where I got that from. Yeah. That's really true. It's like what you're seeing, it's kind of like the movie you're watching. You know, like, have any of you seen like the end of the world movies that are coming out where they have that, you know, the tidal waves that mm-hmm. crash big cruise ships and all that kind of stuff, right? Now, when you're in the theater and you're watching that, it seems very real, doesn't it? Okay, so if you get a little tense, what do you say to yourself? It's just a movie. I put my head in my husband's shoulder and go, this is just a movie, it's not real. Okay, so now if we could go back in time and bring somebody from the 1800s and take them to one of those movies, what do you think they might do? They'd get the heck out of there like, oh my gosh, because they wouldn't know it wasn't real. Well, in a sense, that's kind of where we're at evolutionary-wise. It's like we're living without realizing that it's just thought creating our anxiety and our depression and all those negative emotions that we have. Just thought. It's thought creating everything. So it's coming from you. It's coming from you. Like, I'm going to do one last thing and then we'll get to the principles. But when I was in college, I was assaulted by a burglar in my house. And so I always had this phobia about being alone. And over the years, I've gotten pretty good. But we were in, about 10 years ago, we were in Minnesota. First time I was in the house by myself, my husband left. And that old thinking came back in my head. I was laying in bed with my two dogs, and I could hear somebody walking overhead. And my heart started pounding. I started sweating. I couldn't move. I was just frozen in the bed. The dogs are snoozing. I'm watching them going, they're snoozing. What am I going to do? Is somebody in my house? And then this little voice in my head said, there's not a second floor in your house. And so I was like, oh, I thought, well, what am I hearing? And you know what it was? It was my heart pounding in my ears. And I just cracked up laughing. I thought, what? This is such a great experience. I had this visceral, physical response, and the only thing that was going on was that I was thinking. See? And that's how it works. So, I always tell people, unless somebody's coming at you with a knife, your mind is playing tricks on you. If somebody's coming at you with a knife, you're very usually very present, and you see whatever you can do to get out of the way. Now, unfortunately, when I got assaulted, I didn't do that. I kind of froze, like, But if you're in a good state of mind and you know how to work, you get the heck out of there. That's kind of the deal in life. It's like, do bad things happen? Yes, they do. And can you get through every one of them? Yes, you can. But you have to know that the strength that you have is on the inside. And your thoughts are what, it's kind of like a kryptonite with Superman, you know? It's like your thoughts are kryptonite. And they make you weak when you have insecure thoughts. And when you're in a healthy state of mind, your thinking is good and it creates a sense of strength in you. And you know then that you can take on whatever you want to take on, whatever's happening in your life. And all of that is brought to you by the principles. So the principles are creating your experience, the good, the bad, and the ugly, all the time. Mind is the energy that creates all things. So like when my mother died, she just kind of, it's like the battery wore out. She just started sleeping over time, and then she died. Now, she died when we were gone. We left because we thought she'd going to sleep through the night and wouldn't die until the morning. And of course, as soon as we left, an hour later, she died. She waited till we were gone, and then she dug out. And it was interesting because her body never moved in the bed. But when I went in, when we left her and she was alive, that body looked very different than when we came back, and there was no more energy in it. It's really interesting. So whatever that is, like people say, I don't believe in God. I said, I don't care what you believe in. Whatever that is, whatever you want to see that as, that's the spiritual connection that we all have. And that's where we all come together. And what we're experiencing is just an opportunity for existence. An opportunity to be aware of a reality that we're creating moment to moment. But we're all doing it at the same time. See? So we're able to share that experience. And consciousness is awareness. It takes whatever you think and makes it look real. Like when I'm in the bed and my heart's pounding and I'm hearing this person walk, I'm like, ah! And then, oh gosh, there isn't a second floor in this house. And as soon as I had that thought, it was gone. My heart stopped pounding, stopped sweating, just went away like that. Consciousness takes whatever you think and breathes life into it. And the more you think it, the more real it'll get. Consciousness also is how you're aware of what's going on around you. So what you're thinking about is what you're going to see in your life. That's, you know, have you noticed this where you like learn a piece of information, maybe you're watching the Regis show or something on TV, and then all of a sudden you hear somebody talking about it, you go, oh, I just heard about that. Or it's like you start to notice it. It's like whatever's in your consciousness, that's what you're going to be aware of in your life. So the more you focus on the positive and on love and on good feelings and on positivity, the more you'll see that in your life. It's always there. You just don't see it. And thought is the ability to create these things called our thoughts. But it's an ability. It's just the fact that we can have these things that aren't real and we can store them in our brain. But you can't see any evidence. You can only see the evidence of them. You can't see a thought. You can't, like, you know, do surgery and think, oh, get that one, get it. Oh, get it out. Okay, got that one out. You can't, like, oh, put that one back in, put it back in. They're just, it's like, you know, when those kids have the bubbles where they blow and there's, like, these bubbles that come out of the, you know, you know what I mean by that? What's it called? I forget, but anyway, haven't been around little kids for a while. But it creates a bubble, right? And it looks real. And then what happens to the bubble? It bursts, and then it's gone. Not real anymore. So we're always thinking, like the ability to think is something you can't control that. You are the thinker. But your heart pounding, your lungs working, and your ability to create thought is happening moment to moment all the time. And that's how we know that you're dead, really. There's nothing happening up there. We can't see any evidence of thought. Now, there might be even some life force in you, because some people have come back from some pretty dead-looking experiences, but as far as I know, that's one of the ways that they can tell whether we're dead or not, is that we stop having thought. And that's just how, it's all happening at the same time. You're just creating this moment in time. All day long. And then we get tricked by it. We forget. I mean, we don't know. I mean, I didn't know. I was a therapist, for God's sake. And I had no clue that my thinking had anything to do with how I felt. I thought I was depressed because of what happened to me when I was a kid. I thought I was depressed because my mother didn't want me. I thought I was depressed because I was stupid. I had, you know, by the time I was 30, I had quite a long list of why I was, all the reasons I had to be depressed. But it was just my own thinking. I thought it seemed real. Consciousness doesn't, it's kind of like, you know, consciousness doesn't have a spam detector. So if you think a thought that's not healthy or good for you, it does not know that. It just, whatever you like, whatever you create, that's what it makes real. So we all think we're, like, I thought I was tall when I wasn't. I think somebody's walking upstairs in my house and I don't even have a second floor. That's how powerful our thought is. It's very powerful. So once you learn to how the principles work, it's kind of like you're on a bus going down the mountain road. And until you know how the principles work, it's like you're in the back of the bus holding on for dear life. Oh my God. In fact, it's how I felt when I moved to the Big Island. It's a two-lane road, and all I could hear about was how cars cross the road and crash into each other. So every time I'd get in the car, my husband would drive most of the time. He'd be driving along, and I'd go, and he goes, what's the matter? Nothing, nothing. You know, and I'd grab the side of the door. I'd do whatever, because in my mind, we were going to get hit. Now, I don't do that anymore, but I did that because I was insecure about it. It was so real. Now, I knew it was thought, so I didn't, like, refuse to drive in the car or only take a cab or things like that. But I was still at the effect of my thinking, but because I knew it was my thinking, I could let it go faster. And that's really what the deal is. The principles just help you deal with what you create and what happens around you in more graceful ways. What are you thinking about?
Me?
Yeah.
Realizing I'm a really anxious person. I'm really worried all the time. And that goes back to really, really young. Mm-hmm. And I've just never not... I was thinking, well, if everything is thought, like, if you are thinking you wish something good to happen, that's wishful thinking. But that's not going to happen, because it's just wishing. But it seems the negative thoughts have so much more power to create, and I don't know what's driving them to be bigger or more.
It's just the level of consciousness of the world, hon. You know, it's like we all get affected by negativity in a more profound way than positivity. You know, it's part of the fight or flight, try to make it through life, is that we got to be afraid of things. And I think that over time, we've just been living in fear, because bad things happen, and then we start thinking they're going to happen again.
Yes.
And so, but that's just our imagination, see? It's like we take what happened, and then we carry that moment through time. And as we carry that moment through time, it gets superimposed on the present.
But if something happens to you, mm-hmm. like say you're attacked or raped mm-hmm. or something abused, mm-hmm. then people say to you, well, this is what you need to do to not make it happen again. You need to be a more strong person. Mm-hmm. You need to walk a certain way or dress a certain way. So that doesn't happen again. Mm-hmm. So for me, maybe somebody else would hear that and it would sound mm-hmm. empowering. It felt to me like it was my fault mm-hmm. that I did something.
Yeah.
So then I became petrified. Yeah. I was like, I don't know how to do any of that stuff. I don't know how to be on guard at the time so that nothing happens, because at the end of the day, if something happens,
it's your fault. Yeah. It's not your fault. You know, this is the deal, is we share this reality with a lot of different levels of consciousness. And who you happen to run into at any particular time is just the way it works. You just happen to make the same choice as somebody else so that you meet at the corner at the same time. That's just how it is. It's not your fault.
Or your family or something?
No, it's like people get, you know, people live at different levels of consciousness. And so when people live at really low, negative, insecure levels of consciousness, they do things that are hurtful to themselves or others. Why that is, I don't know. I just was reading this article about the suicide rate across the globe has gone up. And it's like human beings, for some reason, get in a bad mood and they think, oh, I'm going to kill myself. That'll help. Which it does help. I mean, it does stop you from thinking about stuff, but it's kind of extreme. But that's the deal. It's kind of like when you're being helped by people that are also insecure, then they tell you what to do to try to manage something that may never happen again, but that keeps it on your mind and actually puts you in a more vulnerable position, because now you're freaked out all the time.
Yes.
So when I work with people like that, I don't tell them that. I tell them, look, let's just get you in a really good state of mind where you can really listen and be aware, and that's the best you can do. That's all you can do. It's not your fault.
And if something happens again, it's still not your fault?
Well, it depends on what you do, I guess. But generally, I can't think of anything that you could do that would make somebody assault you or rape you. I mean, you don't have that control over people, because if you could do that, I could make people be happy, and then I'd be really rich. But I'm not.
You would.
Yeah. People would bring their spouses and their children to me, and they'd be waiting in line, and I'd have changed the world, and we wouldn't have to be sitting here talking about it, because everybody'd be happy.
So it's kind of like a virus that people give to each other.
Well, it's one that we pick up from each other. It's kind of like, you know, it's like sticking your head in an aquarium. And you're in the middle of this reality with everybody else that's at that level. And you just have to, like, step back and recognize that that's a level of consciousness. And so, like, then you use more common sense. But that's all you can do is use the best common sense you can, and don't watch any TV shows about that.
Right.
Because that just makes it real.
Well, what about people who write memoirs about it? Like, I've been thinking I was going to write one for a long time, because I tell people my stay up, so you should write that, you should write about it. But whenever I really go into it, sometimes it's too much, so I put it away. But other times I'll write and I'll think, that was really sad, and I don't understand why all that happened.
Yeah.
But it could be that I was just around people who were not very aware.
Mm-hmm.
That's all.
That's all. And, you know, it's like, personally, anything that happened in my past that caused me trauma, I don't want to be thinking about it. Because it's over with now. So, as I got into a better place, then I could think about my past and I saw it differently.
Right.
Okay, so when you can see it in a way that you're not affected by that, then if that seems like a good idea, that would be a good time to do it, but not when you're in the middle of being affected by it, because it gets real again.
Right. And I've been spending a long time trying not to be affected by it anymore.
Yeah. You just have to see that it's just thought now. It's just a memory that you carry through time. It happened when it happened. But as you're walking through time, you're just bringing that memory with you. And so it becomes real when you remember it, when you think it. But actually, memories, every time you remember something, you alter it slightly. So over years and years, you really have no idea how much of it is true and what's gotten changed.
Right.
But our minds just do that with every memory. And it's just seeing that you're not that experience. You are a beautiful, strong woman. That's who you are. You're not a victim. That will help you to let go of that fear. Because if you think you're vulnerable, like, I didn't plan on this, I didn't know what I did wrong, and it happened, and oh my gosh. So then you got to, like, live in fear, because you never know when you're doing it wrong.
Right.
Right. It's not your fault. We all are responsible for what we do. That's it. You got to let that go. It's the power of thought, though. You know, and we live in a world where people think that when people are traumatized, we should take them back. And, you know, like, these poor guys that come back from the war, is like they like have them sit down in Humvees, and they reenact, you know, bombings and body parts that go in, and they try to, like, flood them with the experience so they get used to it. That's what one of the ways that they're treating people. Rather than helping people to see that that happened then, that was a bad experience, and now you're here. So you have to learn how to live here and be able to, at some point when you're in a healthier state of mind, you'll look back over that and see it in a different way. It will not feel like it is taking your breath away.
I'm going to use a really odd analogy, but it's the one that's coming to mind as I listen. The way we try to deal with the past is like walking around with a cake and putting it on the table front and center of every room we walk into and trying not to have a slice. Thinking that that's how we're going to get over it. That's how we're going to build up the power to overcome
to say
the
no.
cake. Right? Well, if you just don't carry the cake around with you for a while, at some point you're going to notice you've been in a room with cake for ages and you haven't even had a reaction to it. You haven't even been tempted to have a slice. Now we have, and I keep coming back to the word wisdom because I don't have a better word for it. We have something in us that really guides us, that really knows what's what. And we somehow have the idea that what keeps us, that what would keep us safe is posters everywhere about every possible danger. And that's, so as opposed to a clear window so we can actually see what's going on, we cover the window with all these overlays of everything that could go wrong so that we can spot it if it happens. But of course, then we can't see through the window. We don't have any clarity. We can't see. And it kind of makes sense as a strategy, just like the cake thing kind of makes sense as a strategy. It just doesn't work that way. It's built in. Our wisdom to see and respond is built into the system. Our thinking about cake will just change at some point. We'll get a new thought about it. It won't look the same. It doesn't mean we're going to be more susceptible to eat cake the next time. It actually is quite the opposite. It's just our relationship with cake will change. And that for me is the gift of an understanding of the principles, is seeing that thought is transient. We, by running the same thought again and again and again and again, make it seem continual and consistent. But left to its own devices, the mind has a mind of its own. It'll go here, it'll go there, it'll bring this up, it'll bring that up. And kind of when you can let it go free, go where it goes, you start to notice what's underneath it. And that's mind. That's that intelligence. That's that energy that connects us all. That's the space inside of which all of those thoughts come into being and then come into consciousness and then create experience. And we're just the nexus. We're just that point where thought and consciousness and mind meet moment by moment. But one of the things that we pretty consistently culturally think is that we're in charge of it, or we should be in charge of it. And then it just all, you know, you start with a basically faulty premise. The fruits of that basically faulty premise are just going to be faultier. You start with a correct premise, an accurate understanding. The fruits of that correct premise are going to be corrector. They're going to stay correct. They're going to flow from that. You know, the fruit of a healthy tree is a healthy fruit. The fruit of a rotten tree is a rotten fruit. And that, I mean, it's kind of that simple. But you have to go back to the root for it to be that simple. Because if you start comparing, yeah, but what if it's an apple tree as opposed to a pear tree? No, it's the same thing. If the roots are healthy, if it's coming from that healthy soil, from that spiritual intelligence, it's going to bear healthy fruit, whatever fruit it is. If it's coming from the kryptonite soil, you know, from the kind of lost, repetitive personal thinking, it's going to bear that kind of fruit. That's it. Doesn't make you do anything. Doesn't force a behavior on you. Doesn't force you to accept or reject or do this or do that. It just lets you start in healthy soil. And what grows in healthy soil is healthy. I call on Lori.
A given situation, is it necessarily good or bad? Isn't that just your thinking tool, or am I overthinking it? It's right. It's also just your thinking. It's neutral.
Which is why some people can have a job, and they have to quit the job. Like his friend who quit his job because it was so stressful, and he probably works with someone who loves their job, and does the same thing. Yeah.
What you're thinking? Mm-hmm. Like everything.
Yeah.
Okay. But don't certain things suit certain people, and other things don't? Like the person who loves that job, maybe that job is fulfilling to them, and the other person, they don't particularly like it.
Right, but where would fulfillment come from?
Okay, I'll go with you and say inside. But still, not everybody is suited to do everything.
No, but if that's what you're doing, you can enjoy doing it.
That's a hard one for me, I don't know about that.
Okay, let me tell you this story. One of my friends worked with this guy, these guys that were, he was doing a program for guys that were out on parole, I think. And so they had to come every week to this group. And this guy came and he sat in the back and he was like, ugh, doing his thing through the whole session. And then he came back the second time and he did the same thing. And so the teacher went up to him afterwards and said, you know, you don't have to come here, you know, but if you do come, you need to be attentive and listen. And so he didn't think the guy was going to come back. And so third week, the guy came back, and he sat up in the front with his arms on the table, listening. And he was very attentive through the whole class. And then at the end, he was going somewhere, and he went up to the teacher, and he said, can I talk to you for a minute? And the teacher said, well, I've got to go, but I can give you a ride to where you're going, and you can talk while I drive. And so they were in the car, and he was telling him, he was very nervous about telling him this, and then he said, you know, I was listening to you talk about the essence of my job, that I should get into the essence of my job. And my job is a dishwasher in a restaurant. Like, what kind of essence is there in that job, really? He said, and I was just really irritated at you because you were talking about get into the essence of your job, like somehow we were all like social workers or something. And there was no essence in my job. He said, that's what I was just fighting about. And he said, and then I went home. And I woke up at 3:00 in the morning and I sat up straight in bed and I said to myself, I got it. I understand what he means by the essence of me. It's just me doing the job. And so I started to do the dishes and it was kind of fun getting the cups in a certain way and the plates in a certain way, and he started to enjoy his job. And then the boss came to him and he was kind of like, over by the side, and the boss came up to him and he said, you know, what's going on with you? He goes, I didn't do anything. I've been doing everything I'm supposed to do. And he said, no, I'm not asking you that. I'm just kind of wondering because you're different. And he said, he told him about the class and about the essence of his job. He said, well, I don't know about all that, but if whatever you're doing, keep doing it. And the guy ended up being hired as the supervisor of four of the other guys that washed the dishes. And then he got promoted to be a manager of the shop, whatever kind of restaurant it was. And then he became a manager of four of the shops over time. And all he really did was he had an insight about living in a beautiful feeling himself, that it wasn't being a dishwasher that made him upset. It was the state of mind he was being a dishwasher in.
What was that last sentence?
It was the state of mind that he was being a dishwasher in. So it was the state of mind he brought with him to the job that determined whether the state of mind he was in then. So that's like an example of like, yeah, you know, life doesn't have to be a certain way, but if we're in a good state of mind, then things can change and get better. And it's really about living in that feeling.
And let me just take that, just partly because of time, and just because that's also a nice way to wrap, because that's the essence of what we've been talking about all day, is that mm-hmm. the falling in love with life has nothing to do with life. And everything to do with love. It has everything to do with that space inside of us, that energy inside of us, that intelligence or wisdom inside of us, that feeling inside of us. And when we're in that feeling, it doesn't really matter what we're doing. You know, in those situations where we have choice, we'll make our choices. In those situations where we don't, we won't. But we can live more and more of the time from that space, in that feeling. And when we do, everything begins to take on that flavor, like that secret sauce. It doesn't so much have a flavor of its own. It just makes everything else taste better.
So thank you, guys. Thanks for being so attentive. It's been really fun for me. I just had such a great time teaching with you.
Me too.
And thank you very much for asking me to come and do this. It was really,
really
a thrill. Yeah. Well, thank you, guys.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Yeah.
You can go now.
As we say in Hawaii, a hui ho, until we meet again.
A hui ho.
A hui ho. Oh, thank you.